My name's Bruce. I'm an addict.
Hi, Bruce.
I got here 15 minutes early, and there were five people in this room, and I wasn't nervous. That's changed. I want to thank the convention committee for giving me the opportunity to share, and I want to welcome everybody to Ottawa from those who are out of town. The topic is interesting. I'm gonna fill you in a little background about me. I was born in a family with I had twin brothers. They were a year and a half older than I was. My father was an alcoholic and a functional alcoholic. He'd go to work every day, but when he drank, he became abusive. So I was I had a lot of fear as a kid. And I always lost because my brothers always teamed up against me. They were a year and a half older than I was. And as it turned out in the neighborhood, most of the kids in the neighborhood were their age, not my age. So I'd follow them around trying to be part of, and I'd get pushed away a lot. And this caused me to be pretty insecure up until I left home at the age of about 18. I was Ricky and Randy's brother. There was no Bruce. Bruce didn't exist. Bruce hid in his shadows. I was an addict long before I ever took my first drug. My first addiction was with food. Had a paper route, and after dinner I would go down to the store and I'd buy a couple of hot dogs, a couple of Joe Louis, a bag of chips, a couple of Cokes, and then I'd find some place to hide. And I cram that down my throat. So very early on, I learned to find ways to change the way I felt. And I didn't start using drugs till I was about 19 years old, or maybe 18. I was in high school. And for many, many years, I used socially. Every day. And I was very fortunate. I managed to get through university and get through graduate school while using. The only time I didn't use was when I was taking an exam. But immediately after, I was using again. And I had all sorts, and this was part of my rationalizations. I felt that, you know, I'd say, well, you know, I'm not in the street with a brown paper bag, or I'm not in an alley with a needle in my arm, and I'm not da 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 da. And I had all these beautiful rationalizations, and I'm doing well in school, and I got a professional degree, and blah, 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 blah. As the years went on, every single one of those fell. I'd been using for a number of years, and in 1989, my father committed suicide by putting a shotgun to his chest and pulling the trigger. And I was very angry at him for a long time, because he was always, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, be a man. And when I grew up, you know, I'm from the 60s and the late 60s and early 70s, so you know what life was like then. We believed that using drugs was a spiritual experience. Peace, love. But it soon became my life. So my dad committed suicide in 1989, and in 1990, my professional business went bankrupt. In the spring of 1990, I separated from my wife, and I watched her take my three and four-year-old sons and move away. So I was alone. After my business went bankrupt, I made my first trip to Colombia for souvenirs. And before long, I had another addiction, bringing back souvenirs. My brother Randy died in September of 1990 of the HIV virus. My brother Randy was a professor of epidemiology at the University of Toronto. His main area of research was the transmission of the HIV virus amongst the gay population. And he wrote some very important papers on how dangerous that sort of sexual contact was. And I remember going to his funeral. And I met people from all over the world. And I met his graduate students. And they'd all come up to me and they'd tell me how wonderful Randy was. How Randy inspired them to be more than they thought they could be. Other professionals came up to me and told me how wonderful and academic Randy's research was. And how meticulous he was. And what a genius he was. Halfway through the service, I snuck off into the bathroom to use. And I remember, you know, I think a lot of you will relate to this. A lot of the times using was as much about the ritual as it was about the drugs. And so I went to the bathroom and I went through my ritual. And I remember looking up, and I was about 12 inches from the mirror. And I looked into that mirror and I said, God, why Randy? Why him? Why not me? Yeah, I had a professional degree, but I wasn't successful. I was too busy using. And that's the point that my using became suicidal. I didn't care anymore. I didn't care if I got caught bringing back souvenirs from Colombia. I didn't care if I died. I didn't care if I was shot. I didn't care about anything. God works in very mysterious ways. Everything bad that's happened to me in my life, I look back now and I see it as a miracle because it inspired me to change. By the time I got clean, I wasn't answering my phone. I was letting it always go to voicemail. I wasn't working. The souvenirs I was bringing back from Colombia were what was how I was financing my life. So one time I made a trip. Of course, I was many, many thousand dollars behind at the time. And I couldn't find any souvenirs to bring back. So I ended up coming back to Canada, not knowing what I was going to do. But 3 days after I came back, I walked out to my mailbox, recovered the mail, and in it was a letter. It was a letter from my professional organization. They told me I hadn't been keeping up my books and records as I was required to do. And if I didn't provide them with a full set of books and records, within 30 days they were going to suspend me. At this point in my life, that was the only little bit of self-esteem that I had left. So later the same day, oh, by the way, most of you know, it used to be called GST. At some point, I'm not exactly sure when, but the federal government decided I was going to become a tax collector. So I would add the tax to every bill, and I'd collect it. I just wouldn't remit it. I wouldn't file the returns. So the phone rang and they said, Mr. C, it's Revenue Canada calling. We note that you've been collecting our taxes now for, I don't know, it was 3 or 4 years, but you've never filed a return and you've never submitted anything. We want you to file those returns within 30 days or we're going to freeze all your accounts and take all your money. And I'll never forget that moment because it took me back to my childhood. It took me back to the moment where your mom catches you doing something really, really bad and you start bawling. And you say, please, please forgive me. I'll never do this again. And that's what happened to me. I fell to my knees in my kitchen and I started to cry. I cried like I hadn't cried in years. And I didn't know what I was going to do. What am I going to do? What can I do? I remembered, though, that in my professional journals, there was a phone number. And I thought, well, I'm going to call it. And I called it. And I said to this person on the other line, end of the line, I think I have a drug problem. And they put me in touch with somebody in my profession that I could call. And that person sent me to my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting. And there's some moments in life you never forget, and I'll never forget that moment. I'll never forget the first time I heard, who is an addict? These bastards have been following me around. It was one of those aha moments. So, of course, at that point, I had an untreated addiction, and I didn't, you know, the speaker earlier tonight talked about the first time she looked at the first step, and she didn't see addiction, she saw drugs. And I believe that if I can stop using drugs, everything's going to be okay. I didn't have any idea how deep this disease goes. Excuse me. So, I started going to meetings. Didn't want to listen, I wanted to talk. And I wanted to sound good. So I'd be sitting there in those meetings and I wouldn't be hearing anything anybody was saying other than, oh, they're saying this, well, I can say this. It was all about my ego. And they told me, they said, this disease has three parts. It's physical, mental, and spiritual. The physical is, once I put a drug in my body, that's it. All bets off. I'm not going to stop till it's all gone. And the mental part is that never-ending thought stream of the getting and using and finding ways and means to get more. And the spiritual part was my total self-centeredness. So anyway, I got a temporary sponsor. And I thought, you know what? I got 2 degrees. I know what these words mean. I want to get this over with quickly. So I told him, I said, look, you know what? I got the first 3 steps down, no problem. I understand what they mean. I know all the words. I want to go straight to the 4th step. He said, okay. So I started to write a 4-step and to write. And back in those days, by the way, I got clean March 21st, 1993. We didn't have a step working guide. We were using a series of guides that were produced by a guy by the name of Vito. And man, it was thorough. And I would write and I would write and I would write and I call my spot and if I got rid of that guy quickly, my first temporary sponsor, and I found a sponsor that's my sponsor to this day. And I got, and I'd write, and I'd write, and I'd write, and I'd get stuck, and I'd call my sponsor, and I'd say, Jim, I'm having all these problems, what's going on, blah, 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 blah. And Jim would go, Bruce, maybe you need to start over at step one. No, I'm on a fast track here, I'm not gonna... So I go back and I'd work some more and I'd write some more and I'd write some more and I'd write some more and I'd get frustrated and I'd call Jim. And he knew I got picked the perfect sponsor. God sent me the perfect sponsor because he knew if you tell me what to do, I was guaranteed to do the opposite. So he'd say, Bruce, maybe you need to start over at step one. No. So I kept writing, kept getting frustrated. I was anything but fearless. And one day, I stopped. And guess what I did? I got into a relationship. And I have a problem with relationships, and I'll talk to you a little bit more about it later, but when I would get into a relationship, I would try to get into bed as quickly as possible. And once I did that, I was like committed. Not. But I thought I was. And so I'd start planning, you know, Christmas, our next vacation, how many kids we were going to have within a day. And of course, it was with a newcomer. And thank God she was just a little bit healthier than I was, because she kicked me to the curb within 3 days. And I was in this big old house out here in Constance Bay, all alone. And I experienced the first panic attack I'd ever had in my entire life. I woke up about 2:30 in the morning, and I couldn't breathe. And I was just like gasping for air. And I didn't know what was going on, so I called my sponsor. And you know what he said to me? Yeah, he said that. But before he said that, he said, Bruce, you're right where you're supposed to be. Well, I swore at him. And then he said, Bruce, you're doing better than you're feeling. Two of the most hated phrases for newcomers in Narcotics Anonymous. So what the heck are you talking about? He says, well, did you use? No. Did you call me? Yeah. You're doing better than you're feeling. And then he said, Bruce, maybe you need to start over at step one. And finally, the light bulb went off. And so I did. I'm not going to talk. I'm going to talk more about steps 4 and 5 than I am about step 1, 2, and 3. But they are the core. Because step 4 says, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Well, I got to tell you, it's not fearless. And if I don't have a God that I can ask for strength, and I can ask to keep me honest, I don't have a prayer. And that was my problem the first time. It was all in my head. So eventually I got to the 4th step again. And made it actually to the 8th step. And got stuck. Went back, started again at 1, made it to the 8th step, got stuck, went back, started at 1. And the next time I made it to the 8th step, God put a couple of guys in my group, my support group. And some of you may know one of them, Bill W. He's not the Bill W. that... But he's a member with a lot of time, and he's in the Ottawa area. And we were sitting there, and he said, Bruce, what's the problem? What are you frightened of? And I said, I'm frightened that I won't be able to make the amends. He said, Bruce, you idiot. You don't have to. Well, of course, being the addict, that put a smile on my face. He said, Bruce, you just have to become willing. And another little light bulb went off, and I finally got past step eight. I became willing. I went home and I did 5 years of back taxes in the next week. Thank God for computer programs. And it wasn't as bad as I thought. Never is, you know. We always make it worse than it is in our heads. At least I do. And I was finally at 7.5 years clean, able to make it through to the 12th step. But I want to talk a bit about the fourth step. Fearless. Was anything but fearless for me. I was full of fear, and I prayed all the time, and my sponsor would tell me, he'd say, Bruce, before you start writing, every time, I want you to read the fourth step in the basic text, and I want you to read the fourth step, and it works how and why. And I want you to ask God to be with you, and I want you to rely on that. And I did. Now, I'd understood that the disease of addiction is not about drugs. It's about my inability with the brain that God gave me to cope with life on life's terms. And my disease manifests itself in many different ways: food, sex, lust, buying, cars, women, relationships. And I've done a number of four steps. And I want to talk to you about the latest miracle that God has given me. At 19 years clean, by the way, I'm going to break my own anonymity here. I'm a lawyer, and I got a job with the Crown Attorney's Office. And I was making lots of bucks. And I was doing what I loved. And I shot myself in the foot. Because one of the things I've struggled with, and it's appeared in every single four-step that I've ever written, is my addiction to sex. And it never made it. It made it to the fifth step. Never made it to the sixth step. I was never entirely ready to have God remove that defect of character. Now, I'm proud to say that probably after a few years, when somebody pointed out to me that by going in the rooms in Narcotics Anonymous and lusting after all the beautiful women that we have here, I was breaking their anonymity. I wasn't allowing them to be here as an addict, just as I am. So, you know, I made a little progress. I stopped lusting after, well, I would catch myself lusting after the women in the Narcotics Anonymous. And I would say a little prayer. And I stopped hitting on the women in Narcotics Anonymous. But Lord knows you can find sex in many different places. And for years and years and years, I managed to do that. I wasn't faithful to my partners. There was like, my trigger was this. If you get mad at me and yell at me, that's my excuse to go out and get some love somewhere else. If I'm sad and lonely, that's my excuse to go and get some love. Well, talk about a misnomer, because it's not love. It took me 19 years to realize lust is not a spiritual principle. And it's just as much of a drug, a as the drugs I was using. So yeah, I made progress in recovery. I mean, I lived a lot of ways spiritually. I was involved in service. I was on the H&I committee. I was on the PR committee. I was at the regional level. I did a lot of service in Narcotics Anonymous. I started becoming a respectable member of my community. I started helping other people. I started helping addicts. But I had this little secret. My sponsor knew. My support group knew. But you all didn't know. So I would go to a meeting and, I'd share and I'd get in my car, driving down the road, see something on the side of the road I liked, I'd pull over. I did this for years. And you know what? It never once satisfied me. Because as our materials say, this is an inside job. Happiness is an inside job. It's a choice I make. And I tell you, I prayed for many years to have God remove this defect of character. But I wasn't willing to do anything about it. Now, when I got here, I remember somebody, an old timer, said, God will move a mountain for me. I just have to show up with the shovel. I didn't have a shovel as far as this was concerned. So one day I had the worst case of sexual abuse that I've seen in my entire career, and I was at the courthouse. And I went outside for a smoke. And guess what? Guess who was outside? Someone I'd been with before. So I looked at her and she looked at me, and the next thing I knew, we were in a bathroom at the courthouse having sex. When somebody from my office walked in. I thought the door was locked. This caused me to be fired, publicly humiliated. My name was published in a newspaper in Germany. Prosecutor has sex at the courthouse. My life changed in an instant. But you know what? God finally gave me what I was praying for. Okay, if you're not gonna see all the signs I've been giving you, all the opportunities I've been giving you, then I'm going to make sure that you see exactly the nature of this behavior. And I learned about the collateral damage that my behavior caused to all these people that had been in my life. I thought I was a nice guy, and I am a nice guy. But the denial was so great that I chose to ignore it. Well, I couldn't ignore it anymore. Fortunately, I have you guys. And I went to meetings for about the next 3 months, and I shared with 3 or 4 people what had happened to me. Even though everybody knew it, it was in all the papers. But I wouldn't talk about it. Till one day I thought, you know what? I'm not alone. I am not alone. So I have an opportunity. I have an opportunity to be honest in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. I have an opportunity to tell my story and to let you all know how wonderful my life is today. I have received so many blessings from this fellowship. My biggest fear when I got here was that I wouldn't be able to take care of myself when I got to be the age I am now. I'll be 65 in October. I was 42 years old. And I've been so blessed with the gifts that I received in recovery, the opportunities, the gifts. There's no such thing as a coincidence. If you're a newcomer and you're here today, you are experiencing probably the largest miracle of your life. Because it's everybody in this room that taught me how to live. And don't forget the 12 steps and the 12 traditions and service. I fortunately did a lot of right things along my path, even though I made lots of mistakes. And it was because of those right things that I did that slowly my journey is becoming more fulfilling. I'm not proud of some of the things I did in recovery, but you know what? I'm happy that finally I was able to see the impact of my behavior. So I know full well that the disease of addiction is a lot more than drugs. Now, I love the 12th step because it says, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry the message to addicts and to practice these principles in all our affairs. It's such a blessing that it acknowledges our humanity. It says, try. It acknowledges that we're going to fail. And I know today that I'm involved in a lifelong journey. You know, God has never not given me what I needed in recovery. He's always given me what I need. And I'm grateful for the times that He didn't give me what I want. Because a lot of the times what I want is not healthy. And I'm grateful that even though I ignored all the signs, He continued to love me. So here I am today. I'm retired. I have a pension, a little bit of savings. Get to travel to Costa Rica every winter. Get away from Ottawa winter. Here's a big miracle for you. If this had happened to me 3 months before it did, my pension wouldn't have vested. I wouldn't have an income. I wouldn't have health care. I wouldn't have any of this. So, what is God's will for me today? God's will for me today is to be honest. God's will for me today is to continue that inside journey, to continue to fill that hole that I've lived with all my life in my gut, and to never forget that it's an inside job. Now, you can't do this without the fourth and fifth step. To find a new way to live, I have to know who I am. Even when I'm in denial about it. And the only way to do that is by working the 12 steps. So, at the end of the road, albeit sometimes slowly, we do recover. Thank you.